Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Go. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Jim Lawler, doing something over there on the board. S&P futures up 44. NASDAQ futures up 199. We're cheering. We're not sure what we're cheering. Stock futures jump after Trump chips tariffs have broad exemptions. How do people get these exemptions? This is the most bizarre situation. Do we have Professor Lou?
I'm here.
How are you, buddy?
Good. What's
going on in the Lou world? Are you getting the word from Washington and being able to trade ahead of all these announcements?
Yeah.
Good. How come you're not passing them out?
But because I don't understand what they're telling me, I'm afraid to put any money down.
Well, it's real simple. You got somebody like Hassett comes out yesterday with a story about some huge deal with Apple. Of course, before we hear it, the stock's already up 7%. I'm going to say maybe Hassett had some stuff going there. I'm not positive there, of course, but it's so damn obvious. It's scary. I mean, every move in a stock is combined with some kind of an announcement from these people.
If I thought that there was any kind of predictability to what the president is doing and how he's doing it, I might agree with you. But
there is to him, though.
I'm not even sure that's correct. And I see, is Mr. O'Neill on the phone with us?
He's Kevin is in the sick bay, so he's listening via Zoom.
He's in sick bay.
Yes.
Is he okay?
We hope he is today. They think they have found whatever his issue is, and I think he's going to be okay. Who the hell would I fight with if he isn't?
That's exactly right. Well, Kevin, if you're listening, man, get better.
Yeah,
take care of yourself.
I have a feeling that he'll pull himself out of this fine. But it's been a kind of a slog, or it probably hasn't been a test he hasn't had.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
Kind of one after another, which is that's a tough slope to be on.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, Kevin, hang tough and get better. Okay, so I don't want to really talk tariffs because I'm not really qualified.
No, let's not worry about that. I'm sure we got other stuff.
But I will. But I will say what's happening is exactly what I thought was going to happen when this whole thing started. This whole announcement started, and that is, these are hammers that the president views, for short term use. To try to force deals. He does not look at them as any kind of economic policy from any economic policy perspective, and I don't think he looks at them from the perspective of long-term impact on our economy. He thinks about it in terms of, in his worldview, economic fairness, and he's just pushing ahead, dropping that hammer wherever he can.
Well,
it's being done reflexively, Tom.
Is,
I don't think, as I said, I don't think there's any kind of plan to it. I think you do something if you're Canada, for example, and you do something stupid, which the Canadians have just their latest announcement, which I want to mention briefly, pegs the stupid meter at dumb. But if you're Canada and you do something stupid that he doesn't like, or that hits him home, like recognizing Gaza or the Palestinians, he suddenly he reaches first for a tariff as a weapon, and it's totally unpredictable as to how that's going to play out. So
there was
that's my very limited take on it.
One of his lapdogs, for lack of a better term, was on I don't know which one it was, Lou, because I was driving around, so I couldn't watch. I was just listening. I don't know if it was That Issue or Face It, whatever. It's one of those shows that's on in Sunday morning. And the lady was asking the dude, she started reading the Emergency Powers Act for tariffs. And this buffoon is talking about how Congress gave the president to write in emergency situations to react without going back to Congress. And she says, okay, well, what is the connection between Canada maybe recognizing a Palestinian state in an emergency tariff situation? And the dude flat out said, the way I interpret that is anything the president thinks is an emergency gets to be an emergency. And he gets to do whatever he wants. That's what the law says. And she goes, it's not exactly what it reads. And dude's like, oh no, you're missing the point. Anything that he declares in his mind is an emergency and gives him the power. You know what, Lou? I'm not an attorney. I don't think anybody intended that ever when they passed that law. But maybe they did. I don't know.
Kevin just popped up on chat, so that's good. So I agree. And there's a very quick fix on this, and that is for Congress to step up and pull it back. And apparently that's not going to happen.
Percentage of Congress now, if this guy had the balls to essentially put an enabling act in there, would vote for it? To essentially disband Congress?
I don't think there would be support for that.
I bet there'd be more than you think.
Well, while we ponder that, let me raise something that just hit my news feed last night, and again it relates our friends north of the border. So Canada's got a fire problem, because a wildfire problem, forest fire problem, because they mismanage their forests like we do occasionally, and they haven't cleared stuff, and there's a lot of forest in Canada.
Yeah, well, you gotta be careful with that one, because you know Canada way better than I do, but when I was up there, the guy says if you make a right turn, you come down to Lake Huron. If you make a left turn, you're 1,500 miles of dense forest to Hudson's Bay and Moose. I mean, how do you manage that? There's nobody even there.
Well, you cut fire lines. You know, you come in and you look at terrain and areas where you say, okay, we're going to let this area burn, or we're not going to let this area burn, but you cut fire lines. From a perspective of national policy, the Canadians don't have the resources or don't want to spend the money in any event. They've got a fire problem. I don't know, in a relative sense, how much of their unforced or how much of their forested areas burn. But the citizens of Nova Scotia, which, as far as I know, does not have a forest fire problem. Most of these fires are burning in what I used to call the Northwest Territories and then the northern reaches of British Columbia.
Is this normal? Is this some kind of weirdo drought they're having? Or is this kind of just happens every once in a while?
This has happened frequently. And they've had monster fires. There's a whole school of thought that points out that large, huge, uncontained forest fires are so embedded into the ecology of that region that a lot of pine trees, for example, or varieties of pine trees have seed pods that are designed to open only in extreme heat, like a fire heat. Yeah. That's how embedded they are in the ecology. So it's a regular enough event. Anyway, Nova Scotia yesterday said, you know what, we know how to deal with this forest fire problem. We are going to ban people from going into the forest. And so this edict apparently has come out in Nova Scotia where it is illegal to use the trails, the lakes, hike into the forest, go into the forest.
Don't people live in there?
Well, yeah, and Nova Scotia, I mean, like much of Canada, Nova Scotia relies heavily on income generated from tourists using the national park system and going into the parks. I mean, Nova Scotia is gorgeous. I've never been there,
but I'll take you. Well, Canada is gorgeous, if you don't mind mosquitoes.
Yeah, Nova Scotia is effectively a gigantic Maine. You know, with the coast, it's these fantastic coastlines, and anyway, it's a gorgeous place, and they've got they've just shut down, and then this is what I would consider to be typical, given the recent events, a typical kind of Canadian response. But they've prohibited people from going into the forest. They said, okay, you can't go in, you can't use the trails, you can't go hiking, you can't camp, you can't. And just turned all this off, and I'm just waiting for a couple of other provinces or the Canadian national government out of Ottawa to decide, you know, that sounds like a good idea, we'll just stop people from going into the forest. Well, that'll stop the fires.
We went to Quetico once. My brother talked me into it, canoeing, because he used to go every summer. There were times where they wouldn't let you have a fire.
Well, yeah. I mean, for example, in Colorado, we have burn bans.
But if you're not lighting a fire, what's the difference?
Well, apparently, they think that people are out there throwing away cigarettes or
well, which they are, idiots.
You know, or parking cars in, you know, on dry grass or whatever stuff gets you a fire started. So. I'm trying to imagine, you know, this is such an overreach and a crazy response, but, you know, this is Canada is big government personified in so many ways, and their idea of constitutional rights just I don't believe they've adopted a constitution. They have adopted something called the Articles of Confederation, which was their original governing documents, but this is just a marker of government overreach. Well, it's crazy, and I'm just calling attention to it.
Well, as you led us down this road, remember when we had the huge fires in Yellowstone? Was that like 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, big longer than that. Yes, I do.
And one of my buddies, before he retired, was worked for NOAA, and they were in the process of going essentially around the whole world, Lou, in planes, trying to figure out where carbon dioxide was belching up, where oxygen was belching up, all these kinds of things. And actually rewrote a lot of what people thought about the ecology of oxygen.
Yeah. I remember this. I think I remember this story.
And they flew over Yellowstone, I'm going to say, two years after. Because what you're talking about is the same thing he told me about the pine cones. So Yellowstone was pretty much leveled in a bunch of spots, right? And it was down to the nub with the fire, right? And evidently, however many years later, he said the meter in the plane damn near went to the end and broke. How much oxygen was piling out of there because it was all new growth.
Yeah, and
that will happen again in Canada 3-4 years from now. And maybe, you know, whoever designed the world, if somebody did, you know, it's sort of part of it. I don't know.
Well, if you think about it, all right. So we know a couple of things from back in the, you know, the 1700s and 1800s. We know, for example, that the Western Indians, Native Americans, used to set gigantic fires to drive animals out of the woods or to corral game. And that these fires would burn for, you know, weeks. We know that lightning would spark huge, uncontained fires because there was nothing to stop it until it burned itself out or hit a natural barrier.
Plus, their lightning doesn't just happen when it rains; it just happens.
Right. I mean, you get dry thunderstorms here, and so we know that again, this was part of the ecology here. These giant fires that would burn through, you know, areas for weeks, take down, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres of forest, and that this was a regular event. We also know that these fires would burn with enough frequency that buildup of brush and combustible material on the forest floor wasn't really a factor, because it never really got to the point where you had such, you know, so much deadfall or dead wood and dried stuff that it would collect there to create real problems until we came along. We put fires out and we stop them and we control them, but we don't come in and do the stuff that those fires were doing in terms of clearing brush and you know, maintaining a relatively clean forest floor. And the end result of that is, if you don't do that, and I follow this probably a little more closely than you do, because I have a house that sits in one of these areas where the fire danger is very high. If you don't do that, you end up with a fire that is like three or four times more intense in terms of heat and in terms of you know, combustion capacity than the run-of-the-mill, you know, forest floor fire that would burn when you had something coming through on a regular basis and clearing all that stuff out. And so one of the big maintenance things that you do if you have property in these kinds of areas is you regularly go through and they call it firewise movements. You come through and clear, especially around any buildings that you want to try to save. You clear everything around there within, you know, a 100-foot, 200-foot area. Take down trees and pull branches and brush out, and try to, you know, try to minimize the impact of a fire on the forest floor. So that, I mean, the Canadians, I can't imagine that it. That
well, I can't imagine doing that when you've no, got a thousand no, miles of a person
yeah, we
living
have
there.
10 or 30 or 20 million acres of forest, but you can cut lines through it, and you can protect communities. So this is, you know, this is something that is being done here. I mean, we don't have the same unspoiled territory that Canada does, but we do. I mean, here in Colorado,
are you guys still trying to buy the city so they can use the gold mine underneath it?
Oh, Cripple Creek? No, I haven't heard anything on that. I will tell you, they're getting ready to cut for the first time in a long time. They are getting ready to start digging again and cutting new mine tunnels.
Well, his gold is
through that area.
It's $3,100 or whatever the hell it is. We'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, I mean that mine is now insanely profitable, and there's so much tax revenue pouring into Teller County, where that mine is located.
One of my buddies is.
I mean, it's a windfall for the local population.
One of my buddies was a little bit of a character, but an interesting dude. Everybody's a character, I guess, Lou, in their own way. Especially successful people always seem to be. He owns a bunch of these metal scrap facilities, for lack of a better term. Well, first of all, the city of Aurora has given them no end of heat on one place, but the place gets broken into. And I said, well, what'd they steal? And he goes, copper and gold, like 400 grand worth. And I'm going, what? Evidently, everybody's, you know, what do you want to call it, the computer you have in your office or your laptop or something has some little smidge of gold in there.
Yes. Rare earths,
huh? and you know,
that's why you're, that's why you're not supposed to. That's why you're not supposed to throw them in landfills.
Well, gold, you don't have to worry about it. It doesn't react with anything except you just throw out gold. Anyway, but he says the gold and copper he put, he goes, it's dirty gold. I mean, it has to go to some place to be purified. He says, but there's some there. I mean, it's like, you know, some incredible small amount per, you know, desktop, but still. If you're crushing or doing something, and these guys know how to separate it, and that was pretty. But I didn't realize there was like gold in that stuff, and they could recycle those kinds of things. And there's more. There's kind of more to this than meets the eye. But you know what? I kind of wanted to mention, Lou, is it's kind of a little bit of a theme this week, and I don't know how the hell I got on this subject. Maybe because a couple of the dictums coming out of the state of Illinois. we seem to have, and I actually talked about it with, I don't know if you listened yesterday, Bill Moriarty was on. I really thought it was a great segment. And I said, you know, it seems like, well, my three leaders, for lack of a better term, are Johnson, Pritzker, and Trump. And I'm going to say that none of the three have ever, I use the term, Trump's built buildings and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, he should have some kind of a clue. They say stuff, and in my education and my training, which is, you know, you constantly say how horrible it is for my mentality, and you're right. I immediately look to, how the hell can anybody do that? What's the cost? What's the time? And it seems like people, all they do is talk about stuff that sort of you're never going to be able to do, you know, in any kind of a rational way, any kind of a time period, any kind of a, I mean, we're seeming like we're getting to that stuff at like all levels of government, that the people, I mean, Herbert Hoover was an engineer, for God's sake. Roosevelt was pretty brilliant. Abraham Lincoln knew all about railroads because he worked on one and was a lawyer for one. I don't think our people that are running us have the skill set to run the people they're running. Do you? For whatever reason, that seems to be one of my themes this week. I don't know why I got off on it, but.
Well, so you have, and this falls back to a common theme, you have people who in some cases are ideologues, and we're dealing with that here in Denver. And if, you know, in ideologues, the world looks a particular way to them, and the real problem with an ideologue is when they're in public policy positions is when they're confronted by a problem and they use their ideological worldview to try to solve it. If that solution doesn't work, they double down on the ideology because their worldview never budges when confronted by reality. And you couple that with the idea of the political concept that you don't attack problems that you can't solve because then you look weak. And so you limit your pushes to things that are consistent with your ideology and that appear to be solvable, or that appear to be something that you can point to that is tangible. And so in Denver, for example, we.
By the way, Bill, Lou, I've never heard a more articulate summary of that than you just gave.
Oh,
I congratulate you.
It's all yours. Take it.
I mean, honestly, that is. I guess I know what you're talking about. I would never put it together that way, and it's exactly correct to me.
Well, God bless you. It must mean I'm waking up. I don't know. Kevin can vouch for this. If I'm making sense to you and making sense to me, then we've got a problem.
Well, no, if I agree with you, he's going to have to write it and say he disagrees. Yeah.
Anyway, our classic example here in Denver is a city council approves a $3 million program to discourage people from eating meat.
I thought Colorado was like a big beef state.
Yes, that's right. But there are no ranchers on the Denver City Council.
Ah.
They put this program in place, and the immediate reaction was, A, what on earth? I mean, there are no ranches in downtown Denver. There are no cabs. I mean,
on the agenda?
I don't know. But this is the... Kevin just put a chat message up saying, you're full of crap. What was the topic again? Anyway, all right, we're going to have to stop this because I will get distracted. Anyway, I don't know. That's what's so amazing. It's done. The reason that was put on there is because they said we have to support efforts to block climate change. So, oh, by the way, you know, a bunch of them are as being political activists, leftist and progressive political activists, they're vegans. So they say, you know what, meat's bad for you. This is a good idea. Never mind the fact that this has nothing to do with running the city of Denver.
My grandmother used to say, you don't ever want to talk to a reformed, they're out of their mind.
Well, that's right. But this has nothing to do with running the city of Denver. The city of Denver is getting ready to lay off, you know, hundreds of city employees because they can't maintain their budget. And yet this gets through the city council, again, because of A, ideologues that are looking at the world a particular way, and B, a desperate need to say we accomplished something. So I would love to know. I would love to know if somebody who measured, you know, took a measure on this and said, do we really think we're going to affect them? A, do we really think we're going to affect anybody's desire for meat? That's number one. B, if we do, aren't we hurting the citizens of Colorado, the economy of Colorado, by doing this?
But certainly hurting McDonald's.
It doesn't matter. I mean, this is the...
Are we talking red meat? Are we talking chicken? Are we talking everything?
We're talking everything.
Ah.
You know, and anything that involves farming, because farming, as you know, is bad. Farming produces carbon dioxide. Cattle produce methane.
If we didn't have farming, we wouldn't eat.
Well, this you know, again, this seems to be lost on this progressive worldview.
Let me think for a second here, Lou. If we're not going to fish for chow, I'm not a big hunter, but we're not going to hunt for chow, and we're not going to grow chow, what's left here? What am I missing?
Well, this also fits, by the way, into another element of the progressive worldview, which is if you're a true climate change fanatic, what you really are looking for is to lower the population of the planet. You believe there are too many people. Now, there's not too many of you.
Oh, yeah.
There's not too many of you, but there are too many people. And so you need to get rid of people. And one of the ways you do that is you cut down on the amount of food available. And this is all consistent with this worldview. But anyway,
if you cut down on the food, you probably would have a bunch of people starving. I mean, that would work.
Well, that's the idea. You know, we just eliminate the ability of and the incentives for people to reproduce, and so this is part of the worldview. I can throw out some other examples.
Yeah, the only problem I have with that, we got to go to break, but I don't know how it works, but the human something must be a strong thing, because I see pictures of people who are, the ribs are sticking out of their hide, and they look like they've had a meal in 6 months and still are holding the baby. I'm not so sure that actually works. If you get people hungry enough, they won't reproduce. Maybe it's all you have left to do is to reproduce or something. I don't know.
This is the ideological worldview. Take the break.
I don't continue this. It is friggin' scary, Lou. I mean, S&P futures up 41, NASDAQ futures up 186. That's not scary if you're long. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
We're back.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jimmy Lawler on the board. S&P futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 182. We're actually down a little bit from the last when we walked in, but still we're up in pretty rarefied air. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 406. That's 1.7%. CAC round up 97, 1.3%. FTSE up 282.7%. The FTSE's down 70 points. That's kind of weird. Not sure why that is. Well, They cut rates over there. Cut rate decision reveals divide on policy. There you go. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 264.6%, Hang Seng up 171, which is 0.7%, Shanghai up 5, call that flat bands. And this is getting scary with these rates and with these markets going up like this, but that's just only to me, maybe. U.S. 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.24, the Bund up 1 basis point, 2.65. Oil, which has been bouncing around to the OPEC stuff, is under 65. It's 64.63, even though it's up 28 cents today. Oil steadies on potential Trump-Putin meeting in coming days. Brent up 32 cents, 67.21. We've had gold, which has been kind of on a tear, is tearing up again. Up 22 bucks, 34.56. Silver up 74 cents, 38.65. Which is again, we've got people long in silver and gold, and it's been a good week for the gang. Not to mention people are long the market. In foreign exchange, we're down to actually 116.43 on the euro. We were down to 115, so the euro is actually sneaking up a little bit here. The British pound is 134. Again, it was up, it came back down. Now it's kind of in the middle. Crypto. Up $1,300, 116.641. Jimmy, Air Force Traffic, Weather, Sports. Cubs finally won, but it doesn't help. Brewers win every day.
The Cubs did win yesterday, finally. 6-1 over the Reds. Unfortunately, the Sox lost to the Mariners, 8-6, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Padres, 2-3. In regards to today, it is in Chicago at 7:35. It's 6:35. 73 degrees with a high of 88. We do have possibility of thunder showers this afternoon, and tonight it will be clear but humid at 76. In Phoenix, right now it's 90 degrees and a high of 119. Again, that is a dangerous heat warning for people out there. In traffic, the inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 19. The inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 36. The inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 26. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17. And the inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is at 30. And back to you, Chief.
So, yeah, Lou, a lot of stuff you hear from your thing about the ideologue. I mentioned it the other day. You probably weren't listening. Is Pritzker just came out with something regarding, I've mentioned this now three times, regarding people with autism and other diseases, which is, you know, really horrible, that the insurance now needs to cover equine therapy. And I know you know what that is. It means kids. And I immediately have two emotions on this. And even though we have some, Kevin listening, it never says I'm in the middle on stuff. I sort of am, in the sense that whatever you do, whatever solution you have, needs to be undertaken by both sides. I mean, to me, that's the biggest, basically, bleep up in the Obamacare thing, in that it was all one side. When you do something of that magnitude, both sides need to be on board. So, if there's inevitable screw ups in the bill and inevitable fixes as time goes by, both sides are wearing it, essentially, as we used to say in Pullman, you're wearing it. Both sides are wearing it, and both sides are anxious for the fix instead of just criticizing the side who jammed it basically up your behind, which nobody should ever do. So on the one hand, I'm sitting there going, I know, even from older people, when my stepdad was down in Mantino, one day Audrey brought her little Japanese chin, who thought she was 10 feet tall, and these guys that were just sitting there with a blank stare in front of the TV, all of a sudden the eyes opened up, big smile, she jumps in everybody's lap and takes charge of the room and goes from person to person. I mean, I'm very aware of some of my family members have the dogs they bring to the hospitals. And I'm very aware of how important or how beneficial that can be. Yet, the minute the governor said that, I'm sitting there going, okay, how in God's name am I going to match up these kids to horses? What if somebody's on my block? There's horses 40 miles. I mean, the logistics of this stuff, do these guys even think of this stuff? Or do they just, like you say, are they just ideologues? They just keep going on this stuff. I mean, it'd be one thing to say, we're going to have therapy dogs in the local park or something. how in God's name, how many more stables are you going to need? How much more training? How are you going to teach people? We're out on the way end of the plank with some of this stuff, aren't we?
Well, okay, so you have specialized interests that catch the attention of your decision makers, and I'm sure this is an example. Somebody with a horse therapy business got in there, explained to Pritzker or somebody close to him, "Hey, look, this really works. Da 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 da. It would be wonderful." And the only trouble, who doesn't like pictures of kids on horses? I mean, this gets pitched. This gets how it gets pitched. And somebody, you know, maybe Pritzker himself, although I would pay to see a horse that could carry Governor Pritzker.
And there'd be, you know, Clydesdale could do it.
Pardon me?
But Clydesdale could do it.
I don't think so.
yeah, they could.
I don't think so.
They had a horse for a hoss in Bonanza.
I think he's a lot bigger than Dan Blocker. I think you'd have to put him on an elephant. In any event, the idea, picture, you know, kids on horses. Who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love that photo op? If only we could get it paid for. And then, well, why not? And because it's not covered by insurance, Governor. And he goes, "Oh, well, that's outrageous. We can fix that." And so that's one way that decision gets made. And that's kind of the opposite of the ideological worldview picture, because it's perfectly consistent with the second part of that formula that I kicked out, because it's something tangible and you can point to it and it ends up with this great photo op. And so this gets the, as I said, this gets the personal attention. It's very much like this crazy, it's just silly thing that apparently was buried in the budget bill that got passed out of Congress, that it names either part of the Kennedy Center in D.C. or a wing of it, names it after Melania Trump.
If we're not careful, this guy's going to have the entire country named for him.
I have absolutely no idea why that was put in there. The president may not even know about it. Well, I know you think that, but I mean, this is...
You see the size of the Trump on the building here he snuck up?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I remember the whole fight about that with Rahm Emanuel. But I mean, it's so frivolous. You just sort of think, wait a minute, is this a legitimate focus of government, that this is the kind of thing we do? And the short answer is, in a democratic system, you are subject, just like you are anywhere else, to the whims of whoever is going to be your decision maker. And this is a classic example.
But you would never get Eisenhower or Truman or somebody doing something like that.
I tend to agree, but again, President Trump didn't tout this and didn't push for this. I think it just got inserted by some flunky who now can run to the Trumps and say, "Look what I did."
Well, probably.
I mean, this is the way that kind of thing gets done. It's so trivial that I can't imagine even President Trump throwing any weight behind it.
Well, when you were mentioning earlier in your very articulate thing about his reactions to tariffs and stuff, and one of the ongoing debates I always have with Kevin, and to a certain extent we're both right. I'm not just saying that because he's not feeling well. He is an absolute master and genius at looking at what people say, and what I seem to have come to learn because of the show. And it's not like he disagrees with me totally on this. It's not what you say; it's what people think you said. And if you're really good at it, you can say stuff when you know people are going to believe something totally different. Now, you said earlier regarding the tariffs and that he has a worldview. And if somebody's not doing what does something stupid in his mind or whatever, maybe it's stupid in everybody's mind, he's going to use this as kind of a club. Now, if you were to go to most of the Trumpers I know that maybe don't read into it as much as you and Kevin do, every single person is absolutely convinced the only drive to any of this, none of it's ego, none of it's having people kiss my ass, it's all to bring manufacturing back here to this country. And I think you and I, and even Kevin, think the way it's being done, it's not going to do that at all. We're in today, we're out tomorrow. There's no way somebody can have a five-year time horizon on a plant here and when this changes every day. There's no way you and I could commit to a widget factory here. That's why they want to bring foreign investment in or something, where they just come with a big victory. But, I mean, it's not going to help. You know, you and I are going to go to the bank, we're going to get the loan, we're going to break ground, and all of a sudden the tariffs are off. I mean, if that's the goal, it's being done horribly. Yet most people think that's the goal, because that's what he said early on. Yet I don't think it is that. It would be nice if it happened. I mean, we all agree with that. But it's done so haphazardly that I don't even think if that is the goal that we're getting there. Do you?
I agree with that. I think that's right. I think that has been couched that way for, you know, for public consumption, and maybe in his worldview, in his mind, he thinks that's what he's doing, and certainly his policy advisors are advertising this, and from a political perspective, that makes sense, because that's something people can get behind, rather than him saying, look, whatever tool I can lay my hands on here to get people to do what I want with regard to this economic fairness jag that I'm on, which is not another solid political goal. I'm gonna say that, but you know his focus is limited. He tends to engage in kind of frenetic political behavior, pulling whatever lever of power he can pull, and the tariffs that he's all, and again, this isn't something he's just thought up. He's been a tariff guy since the 1980s. I mean, he's talked about tariffs.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. He was on Dick Cavett in 1980.
Yeah, Dick Cavett, Oprah, he's talked about it. So this economic fairness and tariff thing is a long-term worldview of his, and he's now in a position to do something about it. And he's surrounded by some really smart people who are very creative in the way they look at these statutes and look at the regulations. They're bona fide experts on it. And they are aligning with him, and that's what you're seeing. I mean, one of the things is driving
qualified experts in the weakness in other people and not pushing back.
Nobody
thinks this what he's doing with the tariffs was gifted to him by that act. Nobody with an ounce of brains thinks that.
No, but see, he's doing, and I've talked about this before here. He's doing what political activists on the other side of the aisle have been doing for decades, Tom. He is looking at a statute and creatively interpreting it in a way that nobody else has bothered to look at before.
Well, you have no idea how much agreement you're getting me on this. This is the first time. If you are in the middle, like I am on this stuff, and I like to criticize both sides because I really like to see the country do a little better, you listen to him and you listen to Mayor Johnson, they are an absolute opposite ends of the spectrum. They're the same person in terms of my way or the highway, ounce of loyalty is worth a pound of talent, and everybody around him is kissing his ass. They both are the exact same people in the way they govern, and it's scary.
I think there's a lot excuse me, I think there's a lot of that in our system, Tom.
Yeah, and why is that?
And
why
that's
is that?
We breed for this. Well, we've ended up, you know, the founders, when they designed these documents and were designing this government, were envisioning people like them. I mean, they couldn't conceive of what we have now in terms of the way we operate, but they were envisioning people like them,
You're saying that Trump and Johnson are not George Washington?
Yeah, I'm saying that. Well, let me put it this way: Trump is closer to George Washington than Johnson is. Because Trump has not come out of a political, you know, a political system. Johnson's been in a political system from day one,
right,
within that teachers union. Trump is a business guy. The founders envisioned
He's not a business guy like you or me, with the way he came out of it with his dad and all that. Anyway, just go ahead.
Well, but in many ways, that's his tremendous appeal, is that he does have a worldview that was shaped by his early experiences in business and being on construction sites and things like that. I mean, that's one of the reasons.
I agree.
That's one of the reasons he appeals to. He's got such populist appeal. The founders envision guys like that coming into government, you know, with a practical world of experience behind them. They were farmers, they were business people, whatever, but they were not a professional political class. Now they envisioned that, and they talked about the dangers of it. But their
they hated it over in Britain.
They did. Their worldview was, you know, these are going to be guys like us coming in and out of government that you know are not governing for government's sake, and we have to be cognizant of the dangers of having that kind of political class. That's what we're breeding for now. We are breeding with guys, you know, the euphemism for them is the theater kids. But we are, because that's what they were like in high school. But we are breeding now for a political class of people who, since the seventh grade, have envisioned themselves in policy-making positions. And their entire education, world focus, has been in this direction.
Well, why, can I ask you?
They are the expert class that let us down so badly in Iraq. And in COVID.
Well, why even there? Talk about Vietnam, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, that was David Halberstam's brilliant book, The Best and the Brightest, is about exactly that.
I got a question.
By the way, whenever my friends talk about the death of expertise and how our professional class isn't getting the respect it deserves, and this is a recent phenomenon, this is all the fault of Trump, I say
no, go back and
read Halberstam.
Was there ever a more brilliant man that turned into being a total, I will say, almost a total buffoon than Robert McNamara?
Well, we can go closer to the leadership circles than that. Jimmy Carter.
Carter was
very intelligent.
Yeah, but here's my question. This is not education, you know, somebody more mature, bitching about young people, because some of the people I'm talking about are almost my age. I don't know, the education when I went through, it was mostly Catholic school, but it was always about, you're supposed to always check and do stuff yourself. I mean, Notre Dame was not the Notre Dame of today, the 1% or rich place that it is. It was a bunch of people that challenged like everything. I mean, Ted Hesburgh was that kind of guy. The place has changed so much since he died. It's scary. But if you wanted to go on student strike because of the Vietnam War, he said, "Go ahead." Well, by the way, at the end of the week, I better have a real serious paper where you researched everything about the Vietnam War and where the policy problems were, because he was against the war. He said, "But you're not just going to sit out there and smoke dope for a week. You're going to do something. You're going to prove to me that you actually give a crap, and you're going to and that you're going to research the thing that you think you're in." I walk by people, have a drink or coffee, and a lot of my friends Southwest Side know, and they'll say, "Well, yeah, well, these countries are screwing us with these tariffs, and somebody's finally standing up to them." I said, "Okay, we just put a, I had the list in front of me. Well, at the time I did, we just put a 25% tariff on Switzerland." "Oh, yeah. Okay, what do you think Switzerland's tariffs are?" "Well, I have no idea." "Well, don't you think before you believe anybody, especially this guy who never says the truth, isn't it incumbent upon you to maybe check one or two of the countries just to see what they're doing to us?" "Why?" Well, because how do you know that, well, they got to be screwing us. Trump said so. Let me help you. Switzerland doesn't have any tariffs. Well, they must be doing something else. Okay, it's up to you to actually dig through and find out. If otherwise, what do you have a brain for God's sake? You don't just believe something like that all of a sudden 100 countries are screwing us and we got to do something. Pick two or three of them and see what the relationship is. See if we actually have a surplus. See if we don't. I mean, don't believe anybody. Don't believe it. That's my personality. I don't. But how is it that I'm arguing with somebody and they don't know fact one other than Trump told them? Or he didn't even tell him, didn't even spell it out. How has our education system reached the stage where nobody does anything for themselves, Lou?
Well, let's go even. I mean, at least tariffs are sufficiently complex that you can you can tunnel into it. Let's go something even that's very simple. You know what shot spotter technology is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the classic ideological worldview. Here in Denver and in Chicago, they're turned off shot spotter technology, which identifies gunshots. It's a system of triangulated microphones and sensors throughout an urban area that when a gun is fired, they are able to instantly locate the source of the gunshot within, 100 feet. And there, it's very effective, and it does a couple of things. But the main thing it does is it alerts emergency services, police, and medical to the fact that a gun's been discharged, and it sends people to that area to look and see if there's somebody's been shot. So it's terrific in criminal, identifying criminal activity that involves gunplay. So the technology gets put in places where guns are and gun discharges are likely. You can cover as wide an area as you want. So you guys have turned it off by edict of your mayor, who said, I don't want to use this anymore. Why? Because it brings the police to minority neighborhoods and they arrest too many minorities. And somebody, a rational person, would point out, wait a minute, that's where the shootings are. The shot spotter technology is not manufacturing gunshots to send police to minority neighborhoods. It's tracking gunshots. And so that's where the criminals are. That's where the guns are being discharged. That's where the shootings happen. But the end result is we have too many, to quote Rahm Emanuel, young African-American males being arrested because they're the shooters in these areas, in these large urban areas. This results, turning it off, however, actually makes it your police force less effective in dealing with crime. And it also creates a situation that just happened out there in Chicago, where you had a 16-year-old girl who had been shot in both legs, laying in a backyard for 20 minutes.
Yep.
Because nobody called 911, and the shot spotter technology was not on. And finally somebody said, there's a person lying in a backyard back here who's been shot, and it took the cops 20 minutes before they got to
talk to people. Talk to people who live in those neighborhoods, which I do. they hear shots all the time. It's an every night occurrence. It's like, for God's sake.
That's right. So Denver's done the same thing. The idea being, we have it's happening in too many minority neighborhoods. We don't want the police coming. We're happy with people getting shot. That the cops don't know about.
They're not happy with that. Nobody's happy with that.
The city council people are fine with it.
You don't have to. You picked up one piece of this, and I don't. Well, I'll take a few minutes to get down this road because I'm sure Andrew and Wayne probably are interested as well. Something is seriously wrong, I'm going to say, in Chicago and other places regarding. Who determines what exactly, we serve and protect means? This is not in my day. I mean, everybody knows. My dad was a policeman. My uncle was a policeman. A lot of guys I play softball with are policemen. Great people. I have not seen a worse led, worse organized organization where people have made decisions way up top, and I don't know who the hell they are. But there are decisions that are made, Lou, that we are not going to try and stop any crime or any accidents before they happen. We're just going to clean up. And I don't know, somebody somewhere, if there's an emperor or is a man behind the curtain, certainly in Illinois, and I'm sure it's not the same state. And by the way, it's happened in Washington. We're not going to go after any insider trading. Duh.
It's happening
everywhere.
This is why our cities, Denver, and I, as I said, I'm watching this happen here in Denver. They are hollowing out.
Yeah.
They are hollowing out because businesses and retail establishments are looking around saying, you know what? We are not going to subject our people to this. We are not going to subject our staff to this. We are not going to subject our operation costs to a constant stream of theft, vandalism, drug use on our front doorsteps. And that's what they're faced with, because we have a city government that has said, you know what, it's not fair that we arrest these poor people who are dying basically on the streets, who are killing each other, attacking each other, who are attacking other people trying to do business down there. It's not fair that we arrest people who shoplift, you know, as a way of life, because their life is hard, and it's not. We are going to ruin the environment for the vast majority of our citizens because we feel that it's unfair that a certain segment of our population
60 years
is chronically medically is chronically mentally ill and addicted.
60 years ago we had a governor in Chicago who was very well thought of, who ended up going to jail for some would think trumped up charges on racetrack stock, Otto Kerner. And I think what he really did, Lou, is he was charged by, I think, Johnson to put together a report after the riots of Martin Luther King. And he came out with a paper that was basically outlined all kinds of programs that absolutely sucked, and how we were doing our best to create a permanent underclass, which in the cities happens to be black mostly, but in the rural areas it's not, it's white. I mean, it's not like it's one color only countrywide, and he was vilified for that. Talk about the truth, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, but you talked about ShotSpotter. We'll continue this next week, Lou. We talked about you don't have to talk about ShotSpotter. Drive out to Audrey's with me on a Saturday on the Stevenson. There isn't a cop anywhere. There's a gazillion guys flying down the shoulder at 100 miles an hour, which should be easy to spot, don't you think, if you had any kind of camera?
I would think so.
And I'll tell you, this is so outrageous, Lou. This guy, I see him coming in my right mirror, coming down the shoulder at like a million miles an hour, and these two idiots come flying through between cars on motorcycles, and they decide, okay, we're going to hit the shoulder. So they hit the shoulder like ahead of this guy, and he had actually put on the brakes. The look on his face... This is my shoulder. Who are these two assholes? I mean, the look on his face. This is my shoulder. where do we find these people? what religion does the guy have? Did his parents ever tell him no? How does somebody grow up like that?
Well, let me just say that, and I'll leave it with this. This goes back to the broken windows theory of policing, which is if you say, you know, we're not going to enforce laws above a certain level, thefts above a certain level, you suddenly generate all kinds of antisocial, uncivil behavior on the part of your population.
I got one last one. Wayne and Andrew will love this one. I go to pick up Andrew yesterday, right? So I pick him up at this L stop. And on Sheffield, you know what I'm talking about, right by DePaul, they've taken these gouges out of the street for the crosswalks because they want to put, you know, these fancy new pavement in there for whatever stupid reason. And it's about a 4 or 5 inch drop, right, for a car. Then you know, you go right back up again. Well, this guy's got this really nice new car, and he goes to the thing, and it's a stop sign there, so he goes over nice and slow. Well, the idiot behind him is in a pickup truck. This is 5:45 in the morning. He's outraged, so he flies around the guy, bumps down and up in his pickup truck because, of course, he has, you know, the four wheel drive. Now the guy went through is at the stop sign in the car. He's outraged. This guy ran around him. So there's only two cars on Sheffield, so they start racing down Sheffield like honking and fingering each other for the next two blocks. This is before 6 in the morning. How is it that I see this stuff? If I had a camera in the front of my truck for the few miles I drive a week, Lou, I could pull 100 people over for the egregious stuff. I never see a squad car. I never see an unmarked car. Nobody cares. Then all of a sudden, if somebody gets hit, everybody's worried about it.
I'm going to recommend a YouTube channel for you, and then I'm going to say goodbye. It's called Wham Bam Tesla Cam. And it consists of video recorded by Teslas, which of course record everything, just driving around. And you'll throw your hands up.
Take care, buddy. Have a nice weekend. Grab one of those gold mines for you. You know, we could use a little Stocks and Jacks, and I'll manage your gold for you. We're good at that. Just saying. We have Andrew and Wayne.
Yes, we do.
Yes, you do.
Guys, would you? I think you've been listening in. How about commenting a little bit? What is going on with this stuff? We don't care about anybody until they're dead. We don't care about we don't care about somebody going 100 miles an hour until there's an accident, and we pick up the pieces with 15 squad cars hanging around.
Well, maybe Mad Max was a documentary about the future.
You know what? In Chicago, it sure is. They had a thing the other night about, it was a big deal on the news. And, you know, I think you guys are with me, and we don't want to see anybody get hurt. We don't see anybody get whacked in traffic. So somebody gets whacked by a car on Michigan Avenue. Of course, the bike, I think, went through the red light and hit the car. But that's, you know, this poor biker, you know, he's dead, which, you know, which arguably, it's a horrible thing. So they're putting this silver bicycle as a monument on the corner to where he got whacked. And this whole thing about how, you know, cars got to be more careful. Drive home with me some night. Find a bicycle that stops through any red light, any stop sign, and doesn't wend their way through traffic, go in the other lane. It's a game to them. It's almost like the movie. I don't see how 10 of them don't get killed every night. And yet nobody will ever say anything or do anything. I mean, I don't know how we're getting that way. There's this totally lawless place we're in. And it doesn't surprise me that there's 15, 20 cars running around every night, mostly black people, but probably not. Probably some white people. With blacked out windows, marijuana pouring out of the thing, and 5 guns in the car. I mean, and we wonder why we have a problem. I mean, what don't these people see?
Well, marijuana smoke pouring out of the windows of a car kind of reminds me of the Cheech and Chong movie.
Yeah.
But I'm here in Florida, where the exploits of Florida man and, to a lesser extent, Florida woman are, you know, the fare of YouTube and TikTok. I mean, people here are absolutely crazy. And the driving is horrendous. And of course, our great governor DeSantis, and I say that with clenched teeth, he's managed to chase out all the auto insurance companies and the homeowners insurance companies because of the bad driving down here. Insurance companies don't want to issue policies. And when you see some of the way people drive down here, you can understand why.
Well, plus the cost to repair a new car is off the chart.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah.
Well, Kenny, I think Kenny Pulcheri is our Tuesday guest. I think his wife got rear-ended, and you know Kenny's got some nice car. I think he had a new Lexus SUV or something. And the wife gets whacked in the back end, and he said it didn't even look that bad. It was like $25,000 because of the sensors for the alignment, the sensors for the back camera. By the time they put all the electronics back together, it wasn't just like putting a new tailgate on the thing. It was massive amounts of dough. He goes, why don't you just total it? He goes, what do you mean? It costs $70,000. We're not going to total it. We're going to fix it for $25,000.
Well, they took away bumpers years ago, but you know, bumpers were something where minor bumps could be handled with no damage or minor repair, and now it's all body work.
Well, my one of my judge buddies, he's one of these honest old dudes, and he's parking, and he didn't even really feel it, but he thought he might have nipped the car next to him. So he looks at it, and it's one of these things you're talking about, Andrew, and it's a bumper. It's not a bumper. It's painted, right? And he sees this little scratch, and he goes, I could have done that. I didn't feel it. I'll wait till somebody comes out, and I'll ask what was there. So the lady walks out, and he says, by the way, I'm not sure I hit you, but was that scratch on your bumper before? And he said, she looked like an honest lady, and she looked at it and says, I don't think it was. And he goes, fine. Here's my card. Get it fixed. Send me the bill. And he figures, you know, they're going to, like, buff it out, you know, get a little paint, put it in there, and buff it again, and you're good to go. Oh, no. The whole bumper, $1,500.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like, I wrote her a check. I did it. He goes, but what the hell? So what's up in your guys? There are all kinds of stuff going on with the Wayne or Andrew, you and I were talking back and forth about the Kennedy thing, and I had never read that Jack Ruby thing before. Did you? Where he said that if he wanted to go to Washington, didn't want to get tried down in down there, and if he came to Washington, he was going to tell a story, and they wouldn't bring him. And he basically said if Adlai Stevenson would have been the vice president, Kennedy would be still alive. Wasn't that the crux of it?
Well, there's so much to that story that was never brought out, including a Chicago angle. I mean, one of the most obvious, untruths or flaws in the Warren Commission was they said he had no background with organized crime. Well, he was originally from Chicago, and he was definitely tied in with the mob in Chicago. And then he moved to down south. He became involved with Carlos Marcello, who was the big mafia leader in that Louisiana region. But what's vital to know is Carlos Marcello's region extended to Texas, central Texas. And so Jack Ruby was, in fact, associated with the mob. And
wasn't he a bouncer like in the bars in Cicero and stuff?
No.
Originally?
Well, bouncer is a fine job for college students.
Well, that's where he started, was what I meant.
But it can also have expanded details.
Well, that's what I meant. He started there. That if you walked up.
Responsibilities.
Yeah.
Well, I want to work in a quick joke here. True story. When I was a newspaper reporter, I was covering this 500-pound mob enforcer, Fat Franny Curcio. And technically, his job was goodwill ambassador for his brother's vending machine company.
Oh, God.
But he broke people's arms, and as a prosecutor once told me, when I said, how can a 500-pound guy go around breaking arms? He says, when he asks for your arm, you give it to him.
God.
But at any rate, bouncer early in his career, that could entail a variety of other duties, but when he got down to Dallas, he definitely wanted to talk, but the authorities didn't want him to talk, and he realized that if he talked while he was in Texas, he'd be dead.
But did he know he already had the cancer? We know that?
That's unclear, but the part of the reason this JFK stuff stays alive is the more you dig into it, the more interesting it gets in a way. So his original attorney was the famous San Francisco attorney, Melvin Belli, who was, you remember him, don't you?
I've heard the name, but I don't know the history like you guys.
Well, he was a big-time criminal lawyer, real showman. He had his law office on the street level, with a big window so people could look in what's a big shot lawyer's day like. But he represented Ruby, and when you think about it, Belli used to brag about his court victories all the time, but he lost the Ruby case, who was convicted. And you can imagine that Ruby might have thought, well, I'm being taken care of. I've got one of the top lawyers defending me. But then he's convicted, and he realizes, well, maybe they're not fighting for me too hard.
Well, but I mean, he killed a guy on tape. I mean, how do you get off of that one?
Well, lawyers sometimes have their ways, but here's why the here's my thought on why the organized crime connection was important. Back in those days, yeah, there were gangster movies. People knew their Al Capone, John Dillinger. But until Joe Valachi spilled the beans in 1963 as an informer, people didn't realize the whole code of silence, omerta, say anything and you will be killed type of thing. And of course, the Kennedy assassination was in 63, and Valachi was only starting to talk to authorities in 62, 63. The mafia was still intact. And here's my point. If the theory is that Ruby was part of the mob, and actually he was an owner of a cabaret in Dallas that was connected, then if they told him to do something, you had to do it. You don't say, you know, can I do it next year? Who's going to take care of me? Because you'll be dead. And so even shooting somebody on live TV, if you don't do it, according to this theory I'm broaching here, you're dead the next day. Whereas if you shoot them on TV and you get a attorney, you can hope for a future.
Well, it's because it's all the reason why I get kind of charged up on this and actually talk to you guys about it, because I really love last week's segment. The young lady who's always on talking about the Epstein stuff. What's her name? Kimberly Webb or something?
Whitney Webb.
Whitney Webb. I keep changing her name to Kimberly for some reason. But it's Whitney Webb. And the constant point she makes is how far back this goes, the same sort of people. It's this constant, you know, some secret service, whatever you want to call it, not secret service, but the, you know, CIA sort of Mossad plus, you know, Czechoslovakian group, Russian group. All these guys are sort of against each other, but sort of with each other, and the mob's sort of involved, and it's this big cesspool of God knows what, that every time something weird happens, it kind of leads back to the same cesspool. And I, you know, I watch maybe one of her tapes every couple of days, and other people, and it seems like they're you know, that there were these relationships going back to World War II, when we had people that we could trust, keeping them sort of honest. And as time goes by, the honesty seems to go away or something. Is that a fair? And we're not. I mean, I don't think Dulles was the same guy as Bill Donovan. Do you?
Well, they of course were big rivals. Wild Bill Donovan got his name from World War I, and he really wanted to be head of the post World War II intelligence operation, and Hoover and J. Edgar Hoover and Dulles wanted it more or less for themselves. But here's confirmation of what you're saying, at least in my view, but I'll float a new dimension of it. But as one confirmation of it, during World War II, an important part of this symbiotic relationship between law enforcement and the mob, let's say, was created because of a common enemy, Hitler. And what was happening was worries that the New York waterfront would not get supplies to the troops, that there might be strikes and all kinds of labor problems. And what happened was authorities went to Lucky Luciano, a big mobster in prison, and said, look, maybe we'll cut a deal with you, but, you know, we need peace on the New York City waterfront here to get money, get supplies to the troops. So they let him out, and there was peace. And that's the kind of deal for a higher cause that best not to let the public know. And investigative reporters and authors say, well, maybe people in the public should know. But, and that's one of the things she's written about. Other people have written about it. But here's the new dimension that Wayne and I were talking privately about yesterday. And we often talk about it, naming names, at least amongst ourselves, that some people who get caught up in this think that everything's bad, everybody's corrupt, and they make no distinctions between anybody or anything, and that's bad too, don't you think?
I'm gonna, you know what, you guys know that nobody values your opinion more than me, but I, one of my habits is I push back and I try and argue a little bit only to drag more information out of you guys, because I know there's more in there. As much as you're giving us, there's always more. And I'm gonna give you a little story, kind of about the trading floor. And I know where you're coming from. I have a feeling that, you know, 80% of the people in Congress aren't trading ahead of the president's every word, are not trading on their own. Well, some people are not there only to enrich themselves, are not just getting cash in their pockets. I mean, I know that in my heart of hearts. But here's my concern. When on the trading floor, the options were a new product, you know. I started in 81. They just started in 73. And nobody in the financial world wanted them, okay? What are these things? There always were put and call brokers, but nobody knows the hell those were unless you were really into it. And now this was this new thing that was trying to take some of the steam out of New York. And to say that people were pissed off about it is an understatement, right? Now, everybody on the trading floor, you didn't even really need any regulatory people, because everybody believed, and this is how we should behave, because if we don't, if we're ever going to get some sort of headlines that Andrew and Wayne and Chief all of a sudden are cooking the books on the options floor and stealing trades from people, that headline would absolutely corral the business in the wrong corral. And so we didn't want to let I didn't want three people's names on the headline of the Wall Street Journal, because I felt I would be tarred with the same brush. And everybody on the floor, except for a couple of, you always have a couple of sleaze bags, everybody felt exactly the same way. Yet somehow or another, the people in Washington, they've let it get away from them. There's people that think that every single person in Congress is a crook. They're all out for themselves, except their own person. Their own person's fine, right? And I think, Andrew, you're 100% right on your feelings, but I think you're wrong on the fact that they need to do that themselves. They need to throw the real bad ones out so people say, if I don't say anything, I mean, Mike Quigley, Dick Durbin from Illinois, they could be the most honest people on earth. Nobody thinks they are, because they're comfortable sitting in a room with a bunch of thieves. And until they decide they're not comfortable there and do something about it, you are who you hang with. You know, you sleep with dogs, you wake up with fleas. I mean, where am I wrong here?
Oh, I hate to say it, but I'm in violent agreement with you. I agree with you. I wasn't defending certainly Congress.
Oh, I know you weren't. I'm just.
And what they need to do, and there's very specific reforms that they could do that they won't do. But they're not totally easy, because for one thing, they should certainly ban trading and by themselves. But here's a harder thing that they should also do. They should ban it by family members, because a lot of these scandals are, I can't control what my son does or what my wife does or whatever. And that has to be part of the umbrella that, no, it applies to your close family members. And in fact, Wayne at one point did an almost daily chart on his website. He called it the incest chart or something like that. And it was of relationships of family members that you take a look at and you think, this isn't right, you know. but how come you gave up the chart, Wayne?
it got to be too it was a major task, because it needed updating every hour. Well, one thing I'll mention too is, and Andy and I, we've known people involved with this is that the Senate and the House have ethics committees, but they only seem to really go after people who where there's a big expose in the media, and they're almost forced to take action. Whether the allegations are true or not, when there's blood in the water, that then these other members of Congress, through the Ethics Committee, they come in for the kill. But until it becomes a major scandal, they don't take any action at all. For example, it was well known that Dennis Hastert, the Speaker of the House, had been... it was believed by many people, and he was charged with, when he was a wrestling coach at Yorkville High School in Illinois, that he was messing around with some of these kids. These rumors followed him into the House of Representatives and as Speaker with the underage House pages. These are like 15 and 16-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids, and nothing was done. And when I reported it in 2006 that he had these charges were made against him.
Well, they weren't criminal. They were, just to be clear, and I followed Wayne, scooped the world on Hastert in 2006. They weren't criminal charges, were they, Wayne? They were.
These were parents and kids. These were House pages. These were House staff members that saw what was going on, and these rumors were just swirling around him. Now he was no longer the Speaker when he was later arrested by the FBI for paying hush money through what they called structured payments, which was illegal. They got him on that. They didn't get him on the other issues, but we've known members of Congress who were unfairly charged and were later cleared by the Ethics Committee. But you know, where do you go to get your reputation back after you've been dragged through the mud?
Well, Wayne, the question that our Lady Webb that we keep bringing up, when you mentioned to me, God, years ago, that Hassett had been, these were the rumors we got. First of all, the guy was elected to Speaker. He's from Illinois. My first thought is, how do we get a Speaker from Illinois? I never heard the guy's name. Now the question is, how did he get that spot? Who put him there? Who was able to control him because of that? That's the person I want. And I don't see how we ever get him.
Going back in history and maybe explaining both how he got there but why you didn't necessarily hear of him is that his two predecessors had been eliminated from scandal. One was Newt Gingrich and the other was Bob Livingston. And Livingston was very short-lived. But remember all of Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton scandals in the late 1990s? Yeah. Well, of course, you know, that became, you know, an iconic Washington scandal. But two of the people who were making the most hay out of it was Gingrich. And then it turns out he had similar problems and he had to resign. And then his successor, Bob Livingston, came in and lasted only a short amount of time. He's from Louisiana. And he had to resign over the same stuff, so they had to find...
Well, Newt was just a garden variety affair, wasn't it?
Yeah. Livingston was a garden variety. He went on to be a very prominent lobbyist in Washington. But Gingrich, of course, continues on, but he had another dimension, that one of his affairs was with a staffer. And so that was supposed to be, you know, a third rail in politics. And the hypocrisy factor kind of did him in, but he bounced back like Rasputin. He's still on the scene.
Well, with all due respect to Wayne, I think the people who really inaugurated who found the road for Hassett to get that job kind of knew what Wayne knew.
Oh, I am absolutely certain they knew about him. I'll give you a funny story. I was standing with a very close friend of Andy and mine in the rotunda in the Capitol, we were talking to the veteran congressman from New York, Charlie Rangel, and all of a sudden we see Hastert, who's speaker then, walking across the rotunda floor with like a very young male page, and Rangel is talking to us, but he stops and he looks he looks at these two walking by, and all he does is go ha, and you know what, he didn't have to say anything more.
Oh, God.
It was quite clear what he was talking about.
He was a character, Charlie Rangel, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh yeah, he was, he represented Harlem just like one of his, you know, predecessors was Adam Clayton Powell. These guys were, you know, pretty flamboyant and, you know, but you know, they were characters, but, you know, they brought home the goods for their district.
We're going to go to a quick break, guys. We come back. A lot of stuff to talk about this, man, now you see the thing this morning where Trump wants the chairman of Intel to resign. The stock's down. We'll talk about that after the break. S&P futures down, I'm sorry, up 38. NASDAQ futures up 180. It's up pretty good. It was up a little more, but we're hanging right here. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now, right here, right now.
We're back.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal, Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures up 39. NASDAQ Futures up 182. We've got interesting Intel. Intel's only down 43 cents, even though Trump is now demanding the chairman resign. I don't know. The guy doesn't seem to have any limit on who he's going to tell what to do where, but that seems to be... I'm not so sure what president does. I think he's got a different title in his mind, but that's one person's thought. We have over in Europe, as soon as my machine starts to work here, we have the individual stocks in the Dow. Home Depot up 220. We got Salesforce up $1.48. NVIDIA up 243. NVIDIA's got to be up every day. Redax up 386, 1.6%. Yeah, FTSE's down 74.8%. As they cut the rates a quarter point. CAC up 86, 1.1%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 264.6%. Hang Seng up 171.6%. Shanghai up 5.1%. Bonds, 10-year rates unchanged, 4.23. Oil, we've got up 48 cents, but still 64.83 is. OPEC's decision the other day has kind of weighed on that market a little bit. Gold continues its run up 1960 now, 34.53. Silver up 57 cents, 38.47. It's good for the good guys. We're long both silver and gold. Copper unchanged at 4.42. The U.S. dollar, the euro's back to 116.56, so it was over 117 and down to 115. These 1% moves in currency are a big deal. It's a huge deal. I mean, the currency market is, I'm going to say, 3, 4, 5 times bigger than the stock market when nobody pays attention to it, but it's real money. British pound, 134, it was 135, 133, now back in the middle. We've got crypto, $1,000, 116, 327, trying to get back to that 118 where it was a few days ago. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports.
Okay. As we know, the Cubs did win. They beat the Reds, finally, 6-1. The Sox, unfortunately, lost 8-6 to the Mariners. The Diamondbacks did lose to the Padres 2-3. In regards to, it is 7:34 in Chicago. It's 74 degrees, high of 88. And again, we will have possible thunder showers this afternoon and a humid 76 tonight. In Phoenix, it's already 90 degrees, high of 119. So we do have an extreme weather watch for Phoenix. It'll be partly cloudy and warm of 92. On traffic, inbound on the Kennedy from the Montrose is 28. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 42. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 34. The inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is 17. And the inbound Stevenson from 294 to Dan Ryan is now at 38. And back to you.
Guys, the real quick on this, what's going on, Illinois is involved in this Texas thing where people have fled up here to not have a quorum. And first of all, I didn't think a governor could write out orders to arrest people. I didn't think that I was the governor. But everybody who's a Trumper seems to think you can take any power you want at any time. But like, isn't the thing odd about this, and Jimmy and I were talking about on the way in, doesn't everybody, when the new census, which is on the 20s and the 30s, everybody redoes their stuff usually like the next year, like 2021, right? And in every state, the people who are in charge always manage to screw with it and make it a little bit better for them, and that's been going on since forever. But isn't the unusual thing in Texas is they're trying to do it again in the middle of the 10-year period? Is that problem? Is that
they're gerrymandering a gerrymander.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing. Yeah.
Is that how do you? I mean, just because you have the vote, it's the old joke people are tired of me saying. Democracy can't be four wolves in one hen voting to have what we're gonna have for breakfast. Democracy can be pretty bad as well, right? Why not do it every year? Every time somebody wins the election, it gets an advantage. I thought it was some kind. Is there any convention that's sacred now? Is there such a thing as a gentleman's convention? We do this once every 10 years. Oh no, we got the advantage. We get to do it tomorrow. Is this everywhere? Or just it seems like the Republicans are doing it, but I'm sure the Democrats are doing it someplace too. Does anybody have any regard to decency or any kind of past behavior?
Well, some people do. You, for example, by raising the question. But more and more people are saying, "Let's just do what we want," and who's going to stop it? The New York Times a couple of days ago did an interesting analysis, and they said lower federal courts are ruling overwhelmingly against a lot of these Trump initiatives, something like 70%. And the Supreme Court is ruling in favor of new initiatives by 70%. And so we have two cars heading down the same lane against one another, lower federal courts saying we have norms, rules, and we've got six members on the Supreme Court who say, well, the president's got a lot of power. We let him do what we want, what he wants, until we maybe decide later. So I think that's the big picture. The rules on gerrymandering are norms. They're not in the Constitution. And so in Texas, they think, well, the president wants five new congressional seats. Let's give it to them and arrest these people if they flee to Illinois and New York. And what's happening is pushback on that, obviously, by Illinois governor and others.
What I had a conversation, if I mentioned it to you last week, with one of the younger guys that wanders by our Thursday night out at the local pub, and he was talking about, Trump, this executive order regarding the college sports. And I said to him, by the way, what do you think that is exactly? Do you think it's a law? Well, yeah. I said, well, no, it's not. I mean, somewhere, and this has not been just Trump. I will say this about the man. He picks up on where things are going and just drives them his direction. When I first started on the trading floor, one of my buddies was involved in, well, he's not involved in politics, but he does a business where you have to know who everybody who's in politics, correct? I mean, they do a lot of tax work for people and so forth. And I said, what is the story about individual representatives and people like that trading? He said, oh, no, you can't do that. People put their stuff in a blind trust, because that's why this is in the 80s when a rep was making, what, 30 grand a year maybe? Because that's why those jobs, he goes, take the two guys that are in my area, Marty Russo and some other Italian name guy. Because none of those guys have near as much money as the people that graduated law school with them. They can't belong in a country club. They don't have the dough. They have to have two houses. And if they have any money, it has to be in a blind trust. That's the convention, I guess was the term. It seems like ever since the 80s, and this is not just Trump, so I can't blame it all on him, everything that people thought was sacred in terms of whether it was gentlemen's agreements, whatever it was, one after another seems to be getting peeled away. And Cheney was the first one to say, screw you guys, I mean, I'm trading. Or I mean, maybe it wasn't the first. All of a sudden, everything, every gentleman's agreement, everything that seems where people thought it may have been a rule, and now you dump these executive orders on stuff. And I said to the guy, well, do you think it's a law? I said, it's not a law. There's no penalty for, you can't be arrested for going against the presidential thing. There's no court that would say, you can't put a prison term and going against, in my opinion. Does anybody even know what this stuff is, or is it all getting so blended, and that's part of the reason why everybody says such a distaste for all this stuff?
Well, here's a couple recent factual reports that I think put this in perspective. One, these Texas legislators apparently only make $8,000 a year. And the governor of Texas and the majority are fining them $500 a day to be...
They only convene every 2 years.
Yeah. Well, so this is a real, I would say, courageous sacrifice. If you're making $8,000 a year and you're getting fined $500 a day...
Where does he get the authority to fine them?
I think the majority had, something like this happened before, and so the Republican majority put in a rule that they can fine them $500 a day. I think that's previous, and now they're invoking it. But to go to the U.S. Congress, a flip side, one of the Tennessee Republicans who opposes limits on day trading or other stock trading says, I can't be expected to live on my salary. I have to be a day trader. And people said, you're a U.S. congressman? And what do they make now? About $190,000 a year. And the guy says he can't survive without trading. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, most traders, unless they're really good, don't make money unless you have, let's put it this way, I can do stuff for my clients. I can do what they want me to do better than they can do it themselves. But if they say, I want to be short everything, and I get them short and the market goes up, trading for an individual, picking the right stocks and wrong stocks, is not just, you know, buying the dip. Well, it has been recently, buying the dip and just buying seven stocks and watching it go up. We saw that before in the 90s. It may be lend the same way, maybe it won't. But the idea that you're picking, you're trading individual stocks because of what's going on in Washington, that's a hint that most people don't have. Just saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've brought out the subtext here that if most people, if they try to go out, they get cleaned out if they amateur hour like this guy's talking about. So if he's relying on it for significant income, it has to have some component of insider trading or information.
Yeah, otherwise, you know, I mean,
getting back to the issue with the Texas legislators, I decided to run a predictive question through Microsoft's AI program. I asked the AI program, what happens if Governor Abbott sends these Texas Rangers to these other states where the Texas Democrats are hauled up and tries to arrest them? And the answer was quite chilling. It replied, well, the Texas legislators right now are enjoying the protection of the governors of Illinois, New York, and Massachusetts. They're protected by the state police agencies of all three states. And if the Texas Rangers show up, it's not criminal, it's civil, so it's a civil thing, so it means nothing. They can enforce it in another state. And then if the feds get involved and the FBI sends agents to arrest them, basically the AI program said this would be a major catastrophic constitutional crisis. And you can almost see that there could be like a standoff between two armed parties, the Texas Rangers and the state police in Illinois, New York, and Massachusetts. It reminds one of the firing on Fort Sumter.
I got one here, a headline here. I'm going to give you a fair warning, my two friends. You might want to grab the air sickness bag on this one. Bitcoin jumps as Trump is set to sign an order that allows cryptocurrencies in 401ks. Now, here's a guy that is up to his ass or his eyeballs in his own crypto stuff. Talk about running your own crap out of the Oval Office. And why are people okay with this? First of all, how does he sign that order? That comes through the Department of Labor, I believe, and how that needs to be a statute of some kind of what goes in 401ks. Yes. They are... How does he think he can jump on top of that? Or can he?
The other day he was on the top of the White House wandering around on the roof giving a press conference. I said, well, they ought to release a new movie about it called Diddler on the Roof.
I'm sure you have. If you haven't, well, did you ever read the second book in the, tell us the guy's name. He wrote Hunt for Red October and...
Tom Clancy.
And the second one was Red Storm Rising.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the first part of that. As we talk about these people kind of embedded in Washington and these agencies, and now we got a president... Now, today, just before the trading even starts, he wants to fire the head of Intel, and he's going to allow his cryptocurrency in 401ks, which, of course, no fund has yet that I know of. But anyway... Leave that one alone. But in the book, when the Russians decided they wanted to make war on the rest of the world, the first thing the leader did, and the leader was he was pretty smart, and he knew everything, maybe smarter than Putin. Of course, he was in the book. And he said, you know, for us to get ourselves together, I get all these reports saying our army is in really great shape and our tanks are ready to go and blah, blah, blah. And he had a couple of guys, he said, well, what's the real story? And I said, our tanks are in crap shape, our leadership's horrible, and blah, blah, blah. And so he says, okay, where is there somebody that I can put in charge that is not corruptible, that knows what he's doing, and this is unusual for Russia, they find this red-haired guy who essentially is like a brigadier general, who's renowned as their young genius tank commander, and he was the first in his school and whatever. Well, they put this guy in charge, and he says, if you want me to do this, you got to give me unlimited power, which, of course, nobody wants to do. And he goes, okay. Well, in the first 3 months, virtually everybody above him, all the peacetime generals, didn't know anything about anything. And all the people who were corrupt, where they were buying the new tank threads and weren't getting them delivered, and they weren't even getting on the stuff, sort of like what Putin found out on his war machine when he went to Ukraine. Well, the guy executed... or made retire or made disappear, like, you know, thousands of people before he whipped the thing into shape. Do we need something like that? I'm not talking about the execution part. What's the fix on this? I mean,
well, it's It's actually people being outraged individually about this kind of corruption. The former Washington Post columnist Jennifer Post, who resigned to go on Substack, she's got a column today, and she says the answer is cardboard. Ordinary people holding up cardboard signs saying they're against corruption. One of the techniques that people have is hanging banners over highway overpasses on the interstate so that as people are stuck in traffic, they're looking at ordinary people just saying we're against corruption. And ultimately, that's got to be one of the hopes. But to go back to one of your earlier points about Intel tariffs and some of the other things we're talking about, let me quote the headline for Paul Krugman's column today. He quit the New York Times as economic columnist, as people know, and writes on Substack. And he says this morning, the headline, The Emperor's New Trade Deal. And the subhead is, tariffs are bad, a deluded president is worse. And he basically argues in the column that the world can adjust to the tariffs to some extent, but the problem is when you have a president who actually believes things about the economy, the stock market, crypto, that are not reality based. And he says that's very difficult, particularly if he's empowered to change things on a day-to-day basis without constraints.
And Tom, in all honesty, I think the reason Trump wants to fire the CEO of Intel is he probably thinks Intel Corporation is part of the intelligence agency which he's in charge of. He doesn't know the difference. I do think when you get a president standing on the roof of the White House and then he's doing that goofy dance up there, I never want to hear about any sort of senility exhibited by Joe Biden, because we heard about every incident, every stumble. This guy, it's every hour, it seems, he says something or does something that's should put him into a nursing home on the sunny side, sitting in a chair and given a big bowl of applesauce.
Well, to go back to my question regarding if I'm with Andrew on the fact that if enough people decide things have to change, okay, so 90% of the people say, Joe, it's your job to kind of fix Washington. What has to happen to root out? I mean, Trump has a certain sense of dealing with government in New York and stuff and building buildings and those kinds of things. He has a serious street sense of how screwed up government can be in terms of permits, in terms of everything else, and having to pay people off. Well, instead of fixing it, I think he's become what he detests, but even more than they are. But the idea that what would it take to actually straighten this stuff out, to say to Congress, look, the only way you're going to get any respect on anybody is to keep your house in order. You can't do it. That's why everybody thinks, how would you like to be an honest person in Congress? It would like being an honest person in the mob. Why do you want to be tarred with that brush if you're not part of it?
It's a one term you're talking about. I've known honest people, and they actually lasted one term, maybe two, but no more than two terms.
That's why when everybody says, again, stuff to people, that's why I love talking to you guys, because you actually know what you're talking to people. Oh, everybody's in Congress forever. I go, you're absolutely wrong. There's more turnover now than there ever has been. But if you're not there three or four or five times, and all of a sudden you decide you're in with the in crowd, whoever the hell that is, everybody leaves. Am I right?
And in fact, the great movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, that's one of the subplots in it, that remember Jimmy Stewart is kind of leading some kind of Midwestern Boy Scout operation, and he lands in the Congress, and his mentor is an old guy that looks kind of like Senator Tom Dodd from Connecticut did, but Jimmy Stewart had grew up worshiping this older guy, and remember that the older guy had been a hero, but he had turned corrupt, and Jimmy Stewart didn't really know that, and he was looking to the guy to kind of protect him, whereas the older guy had gone bad and was working with the bad people. And so that's the story you were talking about, the age old, you get in there as a reformer, and you get older, you get corrupted.
I think the word is co-opted, I think, is the...
Yeah.
When Carl supported a guy, and he got in there, and when they got to the part where you couldn't even keep your own cell phone, they had to know who you called and everything, I think the guy lasted two terms, and he said, I want out of here. The guy from Illinois, Fitzgerald, was a one-term senator. Did you guys know him? And he couldn't wait to get out of there.
Well, yeah, we do. Wayne has done some great research on him. Of course, he was the predecessor of President Obama Senate seat. And there were, I'm looking at the clock to see how much time, but there were interesting...
There's always next week, guys. There's always next week. Go ahead, keep going.
There were interesting aspects that have never really been fully reported, including by us, of his departure. In fact, remember there was that whole Senate race with Jack Ryan?
Yeah.
And let me tell a quick quick story about that. I was in Chicago. I was in business then. But I thought for old time's sake, I'd stop by the Billy Goat Tavern there. And I guess I wasn't following politics that much, but all over the TV was the stuff about this. And his wife was, he wanted his wife to go to a swingers club. And I thought,
perish the thought. That
who's
never happened
who's
before.
Got it in for this guy? And it was Jack Ryan, and it was the night that the courts opened up the divorce, and that helped pave the way for Barack Obama to get that Senate seat. But
everybody that Barack Obama ran against somehow managed to disappear, didn't they?
Including the Democratic candidate.
Yeah,
I forget his name. Yeah,
pretty amazing. You know, when we talk about, just quick comment on this, guys, because we don't have that much time, but when we talk about the, I mentioned earlier the thing with the Microsoft and how Hassett came out with his deal, and what is it? That guy, why does that guy give me the creeps? But he does. I don't know what it is about the dude, but, and I could be wrong, he could be a decent guy, but he talked about this big deal that they've gotten, they're cutting with Apple, right? Well, stock is now up pushing $16 in 2 days. And if you own Apple, the amount of money that we're talking about here, there's 20 billion shares out of Apple outstanding. I'm sorry. So there's 7 billion shares outstanding. Times 15 is what? $100 billion in market cap in 28 hours? I mean, this is massive change. And I don't know if you guys, I'll send this to you, but Hal, you know, I've been ragging about how his money supply keeps going up, 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 and the Fed is doing exactly what Trump wants them to do, even though he's bitching at Powell, which is kind of bizarre. Well, Hal took the numbers. You actually can get the weekly numbers like 6 weeks ago. So instead of taking a monthly piggy move up that I did, Hal went back, and since he's Mr. Mathematician, did some kind of an analysis. If you looked at not only the rate of increase of the weekly, but not only kept, you know, when I look at it, I say, okay, it was 7% last month. It was whatever it was last month times 12 gets you 7%. That's the idiot way of doing it, right? Well, what Hal did, it took all the different... He not only expands on the number, he expands on the acceleration pattern. So he takes the second derivative of the curve, not just the first. And he's talking about, if this goes on for a year, we're talking about a 10% growth in the money supply, which is about what happened in World War II, for God's sake, about what happened during the Civil War. That's what happened in the late 70s that caused the big disaster with the inflation. What are we doing here? Are we turning? Are we trying to make everybody's rich richer and everybody else poorer? Is this a stated goal by these people?
Well, it can't be to make everybody rich, because to some extent it's a zero sum game. It's to make the insiders rich, and let me go back to something that you floated. I'm not sure you believe it. You're instigating. Discussion here, so let me respond. It can't be the American way to trust one person to fix things, because the basic innovation of the United States through the Constitution was to assume everybody's got the potential to be bad and to have a balance of power, checks and balances, so that we don't trust a king. Because the experience, King George and all that, is it can't work. We need three branches of government, states and federal, and all of these checks and balances, and we can't just throw our hands up and say, let's find somebody to run everything.
Well, how come everybody is bought into it? When I say everybody, most people think Congress is too slow. Who cares about judges? If Wayne gets arrested and you get on your X thing that Wayne is, somebody says on X that Wayne's guilty, why do we have to try him? We all know he's guilty. You know how much these bailiffs cost? Why do we need these judges? They're all crooks anyway. Why do we need a jury? People should be at work. Once you get the idea that you know everything, this idea of our system of government, it looks pretty tedious, doesn't it?
Well, it's not everybody feels that way, but in some ways, we're people who have influence are trying to make us think that way. And maybe Wayne's experience in the last day or two, couple of days, going back on Twitter is relevant, because here's this big platform controlled by Elon Musk, and Wayne had to or wanted to go back on it after dropping it. And what was your experience, Wayne?
I had to get right on. I had to delete the program. It is absolutely. It looks like a walking down the street in Berlin in 1933 and looking at the kiosks, all the you know, racist tropes, anti-Semitic stuff, you name it. It's everyone. You know, basically, Musk said, yeah, come on back, all you neo-Nazis and racist Klan, and they're taking full advantage of it. It's absolutely a poisonous place to be.
Why are we going that way? I mean, a lot of young people are all over this, because there are people that absolutely are convinced, well, we know the guy's guilty, why are we trying myself? Because this is our... When I have this conversation with people, I go, they might as well think I have five heads. I say, you know, the thing that sets us apart from other people is not that we don't have some bad people and we got a lot of good people, is that we have a process. Is the idea is, even if you are a crook, you get to have a process. That's what sets us apart. It's not that the guy didn't do it. It's not that he's not somebody that needs to go to jail or whatever. The idea is that we actually feel that there's a process behind this, so somebody can't just decide, well, you're guilty, and even if you're not. And so that's what sets us apart. They don't have any idea what I'm talking about, Andrew or Wayne.
Well, we were raised on the good old cowboy slogan, give them a fair trial, unhang them.
Well, but at least there was a trial. You know, I mean, not a good one. I'm not saying we're ever perfect on this, but it just seems like the stuff that we hold the dearest, maybe a lot of people don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah, and now we have Trump and his Justice Department trying to cut a deal with Ghislaine Maxwell. They already cut one. She's in an almost no security prison now in Texas. And she is a convicted a child trafficker and child abuser. It'd be like trying to cut a deal with John Gacy or Jeffrey Dahmer. If you say good things about the president, we'll let you out into a minimum security prison. I mean, what's going on is just incredible.
We got a dash, guys, but to be continued next week. What do you guys, you're in Florida, and Andrew, you're in Washington. Is it hot both places?
It is here.
It's not too bad here, so we'll get through it.
All right. Well, you guys, next week, we'll keep going back and forth on emails. I'm learning a hell of a lot from you, because I'm going to listen to that Garrison thing, Andrew.
That's great.
Because I'm obviously still interested in that. SP Futures up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 190. Jimmy, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.